Eek now.
Eh, smells like it. You can have the royal chamber, seeing as how there's no one else here to take it. There's a tub.
The royal chamber was meant to allow Count Bran and his heirs the luxury they were accustomed to when they went to inspect the mines. The chamber was very fine, filled with oak furniture, fur rugs, and heat-warded stones.
The sun shines at last. A proper bed.
Feathers at that. And tubs over there.
He indicated a smooth depression in the stone floor beneath a heavy pump.
Pumps attached to a heated reservoir. Soak as long as you like, and then come on out for supper.
Arlen nodded, and the keeper left. He meant to take his armor off and get in the bath, but he fell back on the mattress for a moment, savoring its soft support, and found he didn't have the strength to rise. He closed his eyes and fell dead asleep. Arlen eventually made it out of his armor and over to the bath. Working the pump to fill the tub woke him back up, but the hot soak threatened to put him right out again. Eventually, it was only the insistent growl of his stomach that made him pull on his clothes and stumble out of his room, feeling practically weightless without his armor.
Derek?
In the kitchen! Follow your nose!
Arlen's nose led him swiftly to the kitchen. He found Derek wearing an apron and thick leather gloves.
Have a seat!
The large oval table stood at the room's center, large enough for a score of men to eat at once.
Supper will be ready in a moment. You feeling human again?
It's only now that I'm clean, I realize just how filthy I was.
Derek went to a keg, filling a mug with foaming ale. He slid it across the polished table to Arlen with practiced ease.
I keep the kegs out in the snow till they're needed. Tapped this one, special for you.
He took his own mug and raised it in toast. Arlen raised his in reply. They both drank deeply. Arlen looked at his cup in sudden surprise.
Might be a week on the road talking, but I'd swear that's Boggin's ale.
All the way from Tibbetts Brook. There are benefits to knowing every messenger, wagon driver, and caravan guard by name.
Boggin's was the first ale I ever drank.
Arlen took another swallow and let it slide slowly over his tongue. Suddenly, he was 12 years old again, listening to Reagan, an old hog, haggling at the general store in Tibbetts Brook.
Nothing's better than your first.
My life changed forever that day.
You and every other man.
Derek set his mug down to take hollowed loaves of hard bread and fill them with a thick meat and vegetable stew. Arlen fell on the meal like a corling, tearing chunks of the warm crust and using them to scoop the delicious stew into his mouth. In minutes, he had scraped the plate clean down to the last crumb and speck of gravy. No meal in his life had ever been so satisfying.
Whew, night. Even my ma'am never cooked like that.
Ain't got much else to do out here, so I've become a fair hand in the kitchen. Coffee?
Oh, aye.
Derek cleared the plates and ale mugs, replacing them with coffee cups. The brew smelled amazing.
We can take the coffee out to the porch and watch the sunset if you like. Got big windows made out of that new warded glass they started making a couple years ago. You ever seen that?
Arlen smiled. He was the one who had brought the glass wards to Milne, and Cobb's shop did all Count Brayan's glasswork. He had probably warded the panes himself.
I've heard of it.
As they left the kitchen, the stone floor became smooth pine boards, and they came to a large common area with fine pillowed benches and low tables. Arlen's eyes were immediately drawn to the window. They seemed to tower over the mountains themselves. Far below, clouds swirled, and when they parted, he could see the tiny speck of Fort Milne far, far below.
I thought the view of the mountains from the roof of the Duke's library in Milne was the grandest in the world. But it's only a fraction of the view from here.
They sat by the windows. For a short while, they drank their coffee in silence, watching the sun set from the top of the world.
Don't think I've ever seen anything so beautiful.
Used to think so, too. But now, it's just the fourth wall of my prison.
Arlen looked at him and Derek blushed.
Sorry, didn't mean to steal the sight from you.
Honest word, I know how you feel. How often do they relieve you?
Used to be 1 month off and one on, but then I got caught in an abandoned shaft with the Baron's daughter over the winter, and he nearly had my stones cut off. Said he'd be corresponded before his daughter married a servant. Been stuck out here 3 months now with no relief. Oh, reckon she must have bled by now, else they would have called me back and fetched a tinder. I'll be lucky if they let me come home when the station closes for the winter.
You've been alone here for 3 months?
Well, mostly. Messenger comes every fortnight, give or take, and caravans come a few times a year. Weeks on my ass. And then suddenly, I've got a dozen wagons and 50 head of cattle and pack animals to manage, along with 30 guards needing a quarter and a royal to shout at me as I tend them.
Was she worth it?
Oh. Stacy Taylor. Ain't no girl in the world finer, and you can tell her I said so. I could just as easily have ended up the Baron's son-in-law instead of exiled out here.
Can't you quit? Find some other work?
There's only one work in Brand's Gold, and that's what the Baron gives you. If he says spend all year at the way station, well... Still, I reckon that talking to myself all day is better than swinging a pick in a dark mine shaft, worrying about cave-ins, or digging too deep and opening a path to the core. Looks safer than messaging, too. What happened to your cheek?
Arlen reached up on reflex, running his fingers lightly over the wound where the bandit's arrow had pierced his cheek. He had treated it with herbs before stitching, and it was healing well enough, but the flesh around the wound was an angry red encrusted with blood, obvious to anyone at a glance.
Got hit by bandits after the Thundersticks, just past the third caravan ward post.
He quickly told the tale.
Oh, you got stones like a rock demon. Waving a thunderstick around like that? Lucky they weren't looking to hurt anyone. A bad winter can put some folk past caring.
I wasn't giving up my cargo on my first real messenger run without a fight. Sets a bad precedent.
Well, you ain't likely to find any bandits the rest of the way. You'll be in Brand's Gold the evening after next.
Why so long? Aren't we almost at the top? Figure I can crack the whip and make it the rest of the way before late afternoon.
Now, the air gets thin up there, messenger. And just going up the cart path will have you laboring for breath like you were scaling the rock face. Even I feel tired for a couple of days when I go home, and I was born there.
By then, the sun was only a thin line of fire on the horizon, and a moment later it winked out, leaving them in near darkness for the rising. Outside, the whiteness of the snow resisted the darkening sky. Arlen turned to Derek, who was little more than a silhouette.
Aren't you going to light any lamps?
Just wait.
Arlen shrugged and turned his attention back to the window, watching a rock demon rise on the road outside. It was the same slate color as those lower on the mountain, but smaller still, with long, spindly arms and legs with two joints. Sharp bits of horn jutted along its limbs, and it walked as much on all fours as it did upright.
I always expected rock demons got bigger the higher up you go. Don't know why.
The opposite's true. Less to hunt up here, and the deep snow trips up the big ones.
That's good to know.
The rock demon caught sight of them and launched itself at the window with frightening speed. Arlen had never seen a rock move so fast or leap so far. It struck the wardenette in midair, and magic flared like lightning, throwing the demon back onto the road and almost pitching it down the mountainside. The Corling caught itself just in time, long talons catching fast in the rock at the cliff's edge. Suddenly, all the wards at the front of the station came to life, flaring in succession as the magic leached from the rock demon activated the ward net, the pattern of symbols dancing across the walls and beams. Many of the wards winked out soon after flaring, but Arlen could feel the heat wards still radiating faintly, and interspersed through the net and room were ward lights, glowing with a soft, lingering luminescence. Another Corling came at the window, a wind demon that shrieked as it dove from the sky. The net flared again, and the heat wards grew warmer as the light wards grew brighter. More Corlings came at the window, and within a few minutes, the room was brighter than a dozen lamps might have made it, and warmer than if it had a roaring fire.
Amazing. I've never seen warding like this.
Count Brand spares no expense on his own comfort.
A demon suddenly struck the wards right in front of Arlen, and he jumped. He scowled and made an obscene gesture at the offending demon.
They always come at the window. Same demons, every night. I keep thinking one night they'll just give up, but they never learn.
Seeing you makes them crazed. Corlings might eat what they kill, but I think it's the kill itself that feeds them. Humans, most of all. If they know you're here, they'll come and test the wards every night, even if it takes 100 years for one to fail.
Night? That's no comfort.
We're not meant to be comfortable so long as the night reigns. Is it just rock and wind demons up this high then?
And snow demons. They rise even higher, where the snow never melts. But they'll drift down in a winter storm.
You've seen snow demons?
Oh, sure. Well, once, I think.
You think?
The window was foggy from the heat warts.
Harlan raised an eyebrow.
I'm not looking to spin you some ale story. Maybe I saw one, maybe I didn't. Don't matter. I ain't gonna stop drawing the wards. Jongleurs say that's what did us in the first time. I'll keep drawing wards even if I never see a Corlean again so long as I live. Tell my kids and grandkids to do the same.
Honest word. Will you teach me the snow wards?
Aye. I've got some slate and chalk over there.
He pointed to a nearby table. Harlan fetched the items and handed them to Derek and looked on eagerly as he drew. Harlan was surprised to see that the basic ward of forbidding for snow demons was an alteration of the water demon ward. Lines flowing out to make the ward look almost like a snowflake.
Or a lot like water demon wards.
With a few changes.
Derek continued to draw, and Harlan, a skilled warder, quickly saw how the energy would move through the net. His hand moved of its own accord, inscribing perfect copies and notes in his journal. Harlan was back in the feathered bed when one arm tracked him to the station. The station was well protected, but with a giant rock demon powering the heat and light wards, the room grew continually hotter and brighter, until it seemed he was standing in the sun at noon on a cloudless summer day in soggy marsh. Harlan lay bathed in sweat, the steam filtering in from the yard making everything damp. He would be sanding rust from his armor for days when he got home. Finally, when sleep seemed impossible, he got up and began inscribing Derek's snow wards into his portable circles until morning. Derek was unable to sleep either, and had the cart hitched and ready to go. Harlan was on his way the moment the sun touched the mountainside. As the keeper had warned, the going was much harder now. The cold of the road was welcome at first, after the stifling heat of the station, but it wasn't long before the chill crept back into his bones, especially with his cloak and underclothes damp. An icy rime soon built up on his breastplate, and try as he might, Harlan could not seem to draw a full breath. Even Dawnrunner wheezed and gasped. They moved at a crawl, and though it had only been a few miles, they came to the next ward post late in the day. Harlan had no desire to press on further. The next day was harder still. His lungs had started to grow accustomed to the altitude overnight, but the trail continued to climb.
There must be a lot of gold up there, old gal, to make this trip worth it.
He immediately regretted this statement, not for lack of truth, but because the simple act of speaking aloud burned his lungs. There was nothing for it but to press on. So Harlan put his head down and ignored the biting wind and drifts of powdery snow that came up to his knees in places. The wagon ruts vanished, and the trail became all but invisible, though markers were hardly needed. There was only one passable direction, bounded by the mountainside and a sheer cliff. By afternoon, Harlan's entire body burned for lack of air, and the weight of his armor was unbearable. He would have taken it off, but he feared that if he stopped to do so, he might never get his legs to start walking again.
Plenty of folk make this trip. Ain't nothing they did you can't do.
It was late in the day, with both Harlan and Dawnrunner on their last legs, when the small mining town came into sight. Brayan's Gold was a mixture of semi-permanent structures, some of wood and others built from the detritus of the mines, packed dirt and cut or pulverized stone. Most of the structures were poor, having tanned skins for doors and extensions made from tents, but there was a great wooden inn at the town center dominating the plateau. He could see that some few people moved about, women and children mostly, the men likely at work in the mines. Harlan wet his dry and cracked lips and put his messenger horn to them. The axe sent knives of ice down his throat.
Messenger!
A moment later, Harlan was surrounded by children, jumping up and down. He smiled, He had done the same when he was a boy, and the messenger came to Tibbetts Brook. He'd come prepared and tossed sugar candies wrapped in twists of corn husk, small toys and puzzles to the children. Their joy washed over him like a hot bath. Suddenly, climbing the mountain did not seem such an ordeal, and he found some of his strength returning.
I want to be a messenger someday!
Arlen ruffled his hair, slipping him an extra candy.
You're a day early!
Arlen turned to see a small man dressed in a fine wool coat, his suede boots and gloves trimmed in white ermine fur. Behind him were two burly guards with small pick-matics hanging from their belts that looked as much weapon as tool. The man approached with a genial smile, extending his hand.
Ran into some bandits. Pressed ahead and skipped a ward post to get some distance.
I'm Taylor, Count Brayen's cousin, and Baron of Brayen's Gold. What happened to Sander?
Broke his leg. I'm Arlen Bales.
Taylor put his hand on Arlen's shoulder, leaning in close.
I'll tell you the same three things I tell every messenger on his first run here. The climb is always hardest the first time. You'll catch your breath by morning, and it's easier going down than coming up. Still, I'm surprised they sent a first-timer here alone.
Had Messenger Kirk with me, but he turned tail when the bandits hit.
The shipment is intact, is it not?
Down to the last crate nail. Here's the manifest.
He handed over a wax-sealed tube pressed with Count Brayen's pick and hammer sigil, as well as Kirk's and his own seals. Taylor slapped Arlen hard on the back.
This sounds like a tale for inside, where it's warm.
Taylor raised a hand and his guards took the cart. Arlen walked beside him as he popped the seal on the tube and took out the manifest, his eyes running across the lines listing every item on the cart down to the last letter and personal package. There was a personal letter from a count included in the tube, but Arlen was not privy to its contents. The Baron stuffed the unopened envelope in his jacket pocket. They came to the stable, where boys were unhitching Dawn Runner as the guards unloaded the cart. Arlen moved to help, but Taylor put out a hand to hold him back.
You just spent a week or more on the road, messenger. Let the servants handle the backbending.
He handed the manifest to one of the stable guards and led the way inside. Like the way station, the inside of the inn was heat-warded and quite warm. At its front was a general store, the only resource in town for the necessities of life. Shelves behind the counter were filled with various tools and implements on sale, and chalked slates listed prices for food, livestock, and specialty items. The room was crowded with women, many with children at their skirts, dealing with the women taking orders and coin at the counter, who then gave stocking instructions to more of Baron Taylor's burly guards. After the silence of the road, the din was overwhelming.
Follow me!
The Baron quickly led the way through to the tap room and back, and a quiet alcove with a richly appointed table.
Let's sit. Barkeep, coffee.
Arlen blew on his steaming cup. The warmth began to seep back into his bones. The Baron gave him time to take his ease until two women approached the table, one young and another much older. Their dresses were plainer than royal ladies favored in Fort Milne, but the fine cut and cloth still marked them.
Greetings.
Hello, Father.
Arlen stood politely as the Baron kissed the women and turned to make introductions.
Messenger Arlen Bales, may I present my wife, Lady Delia Taylor, and my daughter, Stacy.
Arlen noted the lack of the title mother before the Baroness' name, but he made no comment, bowing and kissing hands just as Cobb had taught him.
A pleasure.
The Baroness was in her late 50s and no beauty, with a pinched face and a long neck, making her seem like a fishing bird. Stacy Taylor, however, was all that Derek had claimed. She was of an age with Arlen, with dark hair and blue eyes, tall and lithe in the Milanese way. She was pretty of face, but Arlen thought it was the sad cast to her eyes that made her truly beautiful. The lacings of her bodice were undone, as if the dress no longer fit well. Arlen recalled what Derek had said.
Reckon she must have bled by now, else they would have called me back and fetched a tinder.
Suddenly, Arlen wasn't so sure. He had to force his eyes up to meet hers before he was caught staring. They all sat, and the Baron and Baroness leaned in close as they broke the seal and read Count Brand's private letter. They began exchanging harsh, knowing looks and glanced at Stacy, but Arlen affected not to notice. He turned to the girl, hoping to engage her in conversation, but the Baron's daughter did not acknowledge him, watching her parents with her sad eyes.
We'll soon be sending a caravan to Milne, so you can leave the cart here and head back with your horse alone. There will only be a handful of letters for your return.
Arlen nodded, and soon after a rich lunch was served. The Baron and his wife kept up a constant flow of questions, asking for news from Milne, and Arlen dutifully recited every going on of note in the great city, along with whatever gossip he had overheard around the messenger's guildhouse. It was the gossip the royals in exile seemed to covet most of all. Stacy took no part in the conversation, her eyes on her lap. At last, a guard came over to the table with a chalked slate and the manifest.
There's a thunderstick missing.
Nonsense! Count them again!
Counted twice.
The Baron scowled and his eyes flicked to Arlen for just an instant. His smile was forced.
Count them a third time.
No, he's right. The missing stick's in front, tucked under the seat. I used it to scare my way past the bandits.
He tried to tell himself he had forgotten the stick was there, but he knew deep down that he had left it there on purpose, hoping that perhaps no one would notice it was missing from the crate. Everyone looked at him in shock. Even Stacy's eyes came open. Arlen quickly explained his encounter with the bandits, though he made no mention of Sander. Still, Baron Taylor's mouth fell open with the telling.
Well, that explains it. Dismissed. You bluffed your way through by waving a thunderstick.
Never said I was bluffing.
Not sure if that's the bravest or the craziest thing I've ever heard. If it's true, you've got stones like a rock demon.
They say a man doesn't become a messenger unless he does.
Arlen nearly shuddered.
But how did they find out about the shipment? Only Mother Sira and I knew the exact date.
And Sander, who supposedly broke his leg the morning of.
That's a big accusation, messenger. Have you any proof?
Arlen knew his next words could mean life or death for Sander. He shrugged.
Not accusing anybody. I'm just saying that if I was you, I'd get myself a new messenger.
How do we know you aren't just trying to get the job yourself?
I'm just an apprentice. The guild won't give me the job regardless.
We could change that with a flick of a pen, and you know it. If you're telling the truth, we owe you a great debt.
Appreciate that, my lady, but I got an eye to see the world a bit before I settle on a regular run.
You young ones always do. But one day you may not think steady work on a familiar path is such a bad thing.
After lunch, the Baron and the Baroness stood to take leave. Arlen quickly got to his feet as well, and Stacy followed, her eyes still hollow.
You'll have to excuse us, but we have some business to attend. Stacy will see you are assigned a room, and have the boys prepare supplies for your return. Compliments of Count Brayen, of course.
They vanished in a swirl of expensive fur, and Stacy gave a shallow curtsy.
Daughter Stacy, to serve you.
You make it sound like a death sentence.
Finally, the Baron's daughter met his eyes.
I apologize, messenger, but the letter you brought from the Count may as well have been.
Oh, my legs still ache from the climb. Will you sit with me a little longer?
Stacy nodded and allowed Arlen to pull her chair.
As you wish.
They say if you whisper a secret to a messenger, it's safer than a tender's ear. No man, nor all the demons of the core, can pull it unwilling from his lips, save the one it's meant for.
This from the man who spread court gossip to my parents for the last hour?
Once those rumors reach the main hall of the Messengers Guild, they are no longer secret. But I will tell you something that is.
Oh?
Derek still thinks there ain't no finer woman than Stacy Taylor, and prays you haven't bled. Said I could tell you so.
Stacy put a hand to her chest. Her pale cheeks turned bright red, and she looked around guiltily, but there was no one to see. She met his eyes fully now.
Clearly I haven't, but it makes no difference. He is not good enough for me.
She absently touched the loose lacing about her belly.
Are those your words or your father's?
What does it matter? My father might have taken the I from his name when Mother died and he married Count Brayan's royal cousin, but amongst the other nobles, he still feels like a merchant because his access to royal circles is only as strong as his marriage vows. He wants better for me, and that means bearing children to a proper royal husband and attending the mother's school.
Arlen resisted the urge to spit on the floor. His father had tried to force him into an arranged marriage when he was 11, and he remembered how it felt.
Ain't got anyone calling themselves royal where I come from. Reckon we're better for it.
Honest word.
How will your father arrange that once your state is known?
Likely he won't be able to, which is why that caravan he's sending will ship me off to Count Brayan's court to have my babe in secret amongst the servants. At which point, the Countess Mother Syra will present me at court as having just arrived in the city and broker me a proper marriage. Derek will never even know he's a father.
You'll have to pass the way station.
It won't matter. A new keeper will be sent with us to relieve him, and he'll be on his way back up the mountain before he even knows I'm locked in the coach.
She looked around to make sure they were not being watched, then reached out and gripped Arlen's hand. He saw passion in her eyes and a thirst for adventure.
But if Derek knew what was coming and had supplies hidden, he could sneak down the mountain instead of up. Even if Father sent someone after us, the moment Derek went missing, we'd have a week's lead. More than enough to find each other, sell my jewelry, and disappear into the city. We could get married no matter what his station and raise our child together.
Stacy looked at him, her eyes burning.
If you tell him this, messenger, with no word to any other or mark in your log, I will pay whatever you ask.
Arlen looked at her, feeling as protective as an elder brother. He would take her message for nothing, but he could not deny there was something he wanted. Something the Baron's daughter might be able to arrange.
I need a thunderstick.
Is that all? I'll have half a dozen of them packed with your supplies.
Arlen gaped, shocked at how easy it had been. But it quickly melted into a smile.
What do you need the stick for?
Gonna kill a rock demon that's been following me.
Stacy tilted her head, studying him in that way people had, as if trying to determine if he were joking or simply mad. At last, she gave a slight shrug and met his eyes.
Just promise you'll deliver my message first.
Arlen took an extra couple of days to catch his breath while the gold men finished preparing their messages for his return trip. He still tired easily in the thin mountain air, but the effects bothered him less each day. He spent the time wisely, watching the miners put the new thundersticks to use.
Fire in the hole! Clear!
After watching as they reduced a solid rock face into tons of rubble in an ear-splitting instant, Arlen knew the destructive power of the thunderstick had not been exaggerated. If anything in the world could penetrate one arm's thick carapace, it was this. At last, all was in order, and on the third day he put his heavy armor back on and headed to the stables. His saddlebags were already packed with supplies, and in them, Arlen found a small box of thundersticks packed in straw, along with a sealed envelope addressed to Derek in flowing script. As the Baron had promised, it was far easier going down the trail than coming up. He made it to the first ward post early in the day and pressed on, making the station well before dusk. Derek came out to meet him.
Messenger! Good to have you back.
I have a special letter for you.
The keeper's eyes lit up as Arlen handed him an envelope, and he held the unopened letter up to the sun.
Oh, Creator, please let it be that she ain't bled.
He tore the letter open excitedly, but as he read, his smile faded and his face slowly drained of color, becoming as white as the snow around him. He looked up at Arlen.
Knight! She's out of her correspond mind! Does she honestly think I'm going to run off to Milne?
Well, why wouldn't you? You just prayed to the Creator for this very thing.
Sure, when I thought it would make me the Baron's son-in-law. Not when it means a week and more alone with the Corlings.
What of it? They're campsites the whole way, and you're a fine warder.
You know what the worst thing about being a keeper is, messenger?
Loneliness?
No. It's that one night it takes to get home. Sure, you can tumble downhill to the station in a day, but going back up, you always have to stop at that correspond ward post. Watching the Corling stalk with nothing between you but magic? I don't know how you messengers do it. I ain't ever even done it alone. My Da and brothers always come out when I'm relieved so the four of us can take turns at watch.
Folk make the trip all the time.
And every year, at least half a dozen of them are cored on the way. Sometimes more.
Careless people.
Or just unlucky. Ain't no girl worth that. I like Stacy well enough. She's a ripping good rut if you get her alone, but she ain't the only girl in Brand's Gold.
Arland scowled. Derek's calm obstinance producing excuse after excuse for his cowardice reminded him of his father. Jeff Bales, too, had turned his back on wife and child when it meant spending a night out of Walls, and it had cost Arland's mother her life.
You go back to Brand's Gold without Stacy and your child, you ain't half a man.
Arland spat into the snow. Derek balled a fist.
What's it to you anyway, messenger? What do you care if I run off with the Baron's daughter or not?
I care because that girl and the babe she's carrying deserve better than a ripping coward.
There was a flash behind Arlen's eyes as Derek punched him. Arlen rolled with a blow, coming around to drive his steel-plated elbow hard into the keeper's kidney. Arlen's next swing took him full in the face, laying him out flat in the snow. Feelings long buried came roaring to the surface, and Arlen had to check himself against a desire to continue the beating. He got back on his horse.
Don't think I'll be staying. Rather spend a night alone with the Corlings than behind warded walls with a man who turned his back on his own child. Hip!
The trail climbed a ridge and then dropped steeply, leaving Brand's Gold and the way station on the far side of the mountain. Arlen's bruised cheek throbbed dully in the cold, and his mood grew blacker as he went. It was not the first time he had underestimated a man and felt betrayed, nor would it likely be the last. But always, it was for the same reason. Fear. Fear of the Corlings. Fear of the night. Fear of death.
Fear's a good thing. Keeps us alive.
That's what his father used to say. But as with so many things, his father had been wrong. Jeff Bales had taken his fear and embraced it so fully, he was convinced it was wisdom. Allowing himself to be ruled by fear might have extended Jeff's years, but under its heavy yoke, Arlen doubted his father had ever truly lived.
I'll respect the Corlings, but I will never stop fighting them.
An hour before sunset, he stopped and made camp, laying out his circles and hobbling Dawn Runner, making sure she was well blanketed. He glanced at the crate of thundersticks and decided he could wait no longer. Not far back, he had crossed a narrow pass that was perfect for his purposes. He took two spears, two thundersticks, and his shield, hiking back uphill. He soon found the pass, overlooked by an escarpment much like the spot Sander had chosen to waylay him and Kirk. He moved up the trail a bit further, scattering small lacquered plates etched with light wards in the snow along the path one arm was soon to come bounding down. He returned to the pass and climbed the escarpment, looking out eagerly over the trail as he waited for dusk. Twilight came quickly, and the stench of the demons rose with their foul mist, seeping from the ground to pollute the surface. The demons were sparse here, but not 3 feet from Arlen, a rock demon began to form on the escarpment. A squat beast with armor the same color as the stone. Arlen knew the demon would not notice him until it was fully formed, but he did not run or prepare a circle. Instead, he crouched, waiting for the demon to solidify. When it was fully opaque, he rushed in, shield leading. There was a full elemental circle of protection etched around the shield's edge, and magic flared as Arlen reached the Corling. Stopping him short and hurling the rock demon off the outcropping, clear over the side of the cliff face, Arlen smiled. A shelf of snow far below broke free, burying the Corling where it landed. He doubted a fall could ever do lasting harm to a rock demon, but he took pleasure in its rage all the same. It was a clear night, and twilight gave way to moon and stars that cast a dim glow on the snow. Even so, He heard One Arm's approach long before he caught sight of the giant rock demon. He waited, match held in his shield hand and thunderstick in the other. His spears were stuck point down in the snow in easy reach. When the ward plates on the trail flared, filling the path with light, Arlen struck his thumbnail against the match tip, lighting it. He touched the fuse of the thunderstick to the fire where it caught with a crackle. Immediately, he drew back his arm and threw, raising his shield and peeking over its edge. One arm stopped its charge, looking at the projectile curiously. But then its good arm whipped across, faster than Arlen would have imagined possible, to bat the stick away. It flew up, out of sight. Before exploding with a force that shook the whole mountainside and knocked Arlen to one knee, his ears ringing. One arm was distracted for a moment, but seemed otherwise unaffected.
Correspondent!
The giant demon turned its attention back toward him.
I've got a spare!
Pulling out the second thunderstick, Arlen fumbled for a match as One Arm charged. He managed to light and throw the second stick, but again, One Arm was quick, stopping short and this time catching the stick, pulling it in for a closer look. Arlen ducked behind his shield as the night lit up with a roar and the shockwave of heat and force bowled him over, nearly knocking Arlen from the escarpment. A moment later, Arlen looked up, expecting to see half the demon's head blown off. One arm stood there, unharmed. Arlen took up one of the spears, drawing back and throwing hard. The missile struck the demon full in the chest, splintering on impact and doing no harm.
What does it take to kill you?
Knowing the fight was lost, Arlen dropped his shield to the ground, standing at the center of its small circle of protection. The ground shook from the demon's charge, and Arlen's knees buckled. He stumbled from his perch atop the convex shield and knew he could not trust its protection through the night. Quickly, he picked his shield back up, taking a spear in his other hand. His armor might protect him long enough to retreat back to Dawnrunner's Circle, but it was a long way to run through the snow at night, especially with 70 pounds of steel on his back. It seemed the whole mountain shook. One arm reached the outcropping, leaping up to catch its limb. The great talons of its good arm dug into the stone as it pulled itself up. Arlen stabbed at the hand uselessly. Suddenly, he realized it wasn't One Arm causing the deafening roar. He looked up and saw nothing but whiteness rushing at him like water. Barely thinking, Arlen leapt from the far side of the escarpment, half sliding and half tumbling down to the trail. Ignoring the sharp spikes of pain from the fall, he immediately fetched up against the mountainside and raised his shield. Shaken loose by the thundersticks, the avalanche struck One Arm full on, knocking the giant demon over the cliff in much the same manner as Arlen had its smaller cousin. He saw the demon fall an instant before being buried himself. There was surprising weight to the snow, and Arlen's arm threatened to buckle, but he succeeded in creating a pocket of shelter. He was able to quickly dig himself out. He went over to the edge of the cliff, but there was no sign of One Arm in the darkness, nor sound of its cries.
Yes! Yes!
He pumped a fist into the air. Perhaps he had not been able to kill the demon, but he had faced it again and lived to tell the tale, and it might be days before One Arm found his trail again. The grin died on Arlen's face. The avalanche must have brought a demon down from higher up the mountain. His hand tightened on his spear, and he turned slowly, shield up. The moon and stars were bright and reflected off the snow, casting a gray gloom through the darkness. At first, he didn't see it, but the calling drew closer. The wards on his armor and shield began to draw upon its magic, glowing softly. There was movement in the ward light, and finally Arlen caught sight of it. A demon with pure white scales that glittered like snowflakes. It looked much like a flame demon, no bigger than a mid-sized dog, and crouched on all fours with a long snout and horns that ran back flat over pointed ears and a long, corded neck. On impulse, Arlen spat upon the demon. He was amazed to find the rumor was true. If you spit on a snow demon's white scales, it freezes and bursts with a crack. The snow demon's eyes narrowed, and its snout split wide in what might have been a smile. It spat back at him. Arlen managed to get his shield up in time, catching the spray. The surface turned white with rime, and his shield arm grew numb from the cold. The demon leapt at him, and his shield, made brittle by the Quarling's cold spit, shattered on impact. Arlen was knocked onto his back in the snow, but managed to get a leg between the demon and himself, kicking it away. The snow demon was knocked to the cliff's edge, but dug in its front claws and held fast, back talons scrabbling for purchase. Arlen shook off the remains of his shield. He intended to charge, spear leading, sending it tumbling down to wherever one arm had landed. The Quarling tamped down and sprang to meet his charge. Arlen spun his spear into a horizontal defense. But the Quarling caught the shaft in its teeth and bit through the thick wood like it was a celery stalk. Arlen took the two halves and swung them like clubs to box the demon's ears, knocking it aside. Before the demon could recover, Arlen turned and ran. It was one thing to press an advantage when a demon was hanging by its claws, but another to fight one head-on. There were no snow wards on his armor, and he had no defense against its cold spit. The wards on his armor continued to glow softly, helping light his way, but also serving as a beacon to the snow demon and any other Quarlings that might be in the area. He used the downward slope to add reckless speed to his flight, but in the end, it was not enough. His legs sank into the loose snow, but the snow demon ran across its surface like a bug skating on water. The snow demon hit his back, knocking the wind from him and bearing him to the ground. Arlen rolled with the impact, but he had barely rolled onto his back before it was upon him again. He put up his armor forearm to hold it back, and the demon caught the thick steel plate in its teeth and began to squeeze. Metal bent, and though his arm was still numbed by the cold spit, Arlen was in agony. The demon's talons raked at him, tearing easily through the steel mesh at his joints and piercing the larger plates like blacksmith shears. Arlen felt the cold claws pierce his flesh, like being stabbed with icicles. The demon thrashed its head from side to side, teeth still clamped, threatening to tear his arm clear out of the socket. Blood spat at his face from the injured limb. In that instant, sure of his own death, Arlen caught sight of the demon's bare belly, smooth like new snow, and saw a chance. With the fingers of his free hand, he caught a swab of his own blood and reached out, drawing a crude heat ward on the snow demon's stomach. The ward flared, brighter and more powerful than any he had seen at the station. Those wards were powered by feedback alone, but this ward drew on the Quarling's dark magic directly. Arlen felt his face burn from its power. The demon let go its grip, and Arlen shoved it away. It landed on its back, and Arlen saw his blood ward blacken the white scales and burst into flame. It consumed the demon like sunlight. Arlen was bloody and torn, but very much alive as he watched the thrashing snow demon immolated in fire. Once he was back within the safety of his circles, Arlen found he needed a pry bar to get some of the pieces of his armor off. There was no choice, as the twisted metal cut off his blood flow in more than one place and cut into his skin in others. He lit the fire he had wisely laid in advance and spent the rest of the night huddled by it, trying to restore feeling to his arm as he stitched his flesh. Feeling slowly returned to his numb arm, bringing with it a maddening pain as if he had been burned. But through it all, he was smiling. He hadn't killed the demon he set out to, but he had killed one nonetheless. And that was more than anyone he had ever known could claim. Arlen welcomed the pain, for it meant he was alive when he had no right to be. Arlen led Dawnrunner down the steep trails the next morning, happy to walk and keep his blood pumping. Late in the day, he had a visitor.
Messenger!
Arlen turned to see Derek running hard after him. He stopped, and the keeper soon caught up, stumbling to a stop. Arlen caught him with his good arm and set him to hang on Dawnrunner's saddle, red-faced. His eye was blue and swollen where Arlen had punched him.
You're a long way from the station.
Whole mountain heard those thundersticks in the night and the slide that followed. I took my skis and went looking for you.
Why?
Figured either you were dead, and I should try and send your bones to your mother, or alive and needing some help. You ain't my favorite person, Messenger, but anyone deserves that much.
That would have taken you to the side of the avalanche 6 hours back, where you would have seen my tracks and known I was all right. Why keep on?
I knew you were right yesterday about me not standing by my own. I think that's what got me so mad. And then when I saw what was left of that demon you killed, it was like a kick in the stones. Don't know what came over me. I just kept on going while my nerve held. Figured the caravan will think I'm dead, but they'll still have to get Stacy out of Brand's gold before her belly swells. I'll go to Milne and wait for her.
Arlen smiled and clapped him on the shoulder.
Good man.
Some apprentice you turned out to be! How many times have I shown you this, boy? Rocks for brains, have you? Now let's do it again and see if you can get it right!
Cobb looked up at the door chime and saw Arlen standing there, Derek in tow. The irritation left his face, and the apprentice wisely used the distraction to vanish into the back room.
Now you made it back.
This is Derek out of Brayan's Gold. He's got a steady warden hand and could use some work.
You're hired!
Cobb pointed his leathery chin at Arlen's left arm, missing its armor and bound in a sling.
Oh, what happened?
You know someone who's met a snow demon firsthand.
Cobb shook his head and bent over his work.
I should have known. If they were out there, you'd find one.
Brayan's Gold is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2011, Peter V. Brett. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the author. Production copyright 2014, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication prohibited. Performed by Dylan Lynch, Johan Detweiler, Nick DePinto, Terrence Azelford, Scott McCormick, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Kimberly Gilbert, Andy Clements, Lily Beacon, Mort Shelby, Matthew Bassett, Eric Messner, Thomas Keegan, and Colleen Delaney. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. Theme music and additional music by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Tracy Cothran and Rose Elizabeth Supan. If you enjoyed Brayan's Gold, be sure to listen to all of Peter V. Brett's Demon Cycle titles, The Warded Man, The Desert Spear, and The Daylight War, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. where you'll find samples of all our action-pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts.